looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Store, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ramachar's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXD-TV, and Mohegan Sun. Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Miller to the plate, and he struck him out. Andrew Miller in here in the sixth inning. Payoff pitch, he struck him out. And he struck him out, the 0-2. And he struck him out on three pitches.
So I know what you're thinking. I know you're wondering why we're playing you Andrew Miller highlights from the playoffs 2 years ago when he mowed down the Red Sox, and that's what those are. Why are we playing you Andrew Miller highlights? We're trying to relive the Red Sox failures of October? Is that what we're trying to do here? No. 617-779-0985. There's a reason we're playing you those highlights here on the Baseball Reporters. We'll be with you up until 7 o'clock. And the Red Sox, you go this many days without a game? Boy, after a while, you really start to miss it. I'm missing the baseball now. The All-Star game doesn't count. Fortunately, we do, I don't want to call it a hot stove season. It's more like an air conditioner season while you're waiting it out here. But nonetheless, the trade deadline is now moving, and dare I say, in full force. You're starting to see significant trades. In the last 24 hours, Manny Machado basically to the Los Angeles Dodgers. I still don't know if that deal has been formally announced. I don't think it has, right? The players are agreed upon, but there was no formal deal. So, in and of itself, you can talk about that if you want as a baseball fan. I don't think that one impacts the Red Sox all that much. And in fact, the Manny Machado deal helps the Red Sox. But there was another deal made today that you should take note of. Left-handed reliever Brad Hand from the San Diego Padres to the Cleveland Indians. So the same Cleveland team that acquired Andrew Miller, and they acquired him in 2016. They gave up significant prospects for him from the Yankees. They acquired Andrew Miller as a left-hander out of that bullpen who could go multiple innings, get lefties and righties, and even close if they needed to. And the same team that did that went out and got Brad Hand today. The Cleveland Indians are a better team as a result of it. And the Red Sox still holding the bag, looking for bullpen help. And so 617-779-0985. The Brad Hand deal, in some ways you have to give the Red Sox a pass. Okay, and this will bring me to a bigger picture topic here shortly on Dave Dombrowski. But in exchange for Brad Hand, the Cleveland Indians gave up a catching prospect who admittedly has defensive problems and may not project as a catcher. He may project as an outfielder. But they gave up a player who was ranked 15th in all of baseball among minor league prospects by the MLB Pipeline Top 100. MLB has its own assessment of prospects that it rates them in addition to Baseball America. I usually go Baseball America, but nonetheless, this guy was top 15 with MLB. The Baseball America list had him at 24th. So if you want to split the difference, this guy was a top 20 prospect in the game. Not in the Cleveland organization, in the game. Top 20 prospect. And the Red Sox equivalent of a top 10, 20 prospect would be who? Somebody, please tell me who. Who would be the top 20 prospect that the Red Sox have?
Jalen Beeks.
And if you answer nobody, you would be correct. The Red Sox don't have a top 20 prospect.
Blake Swihart.
In fact, Jimmy Stewart, they don't have a top 100 prospect. I think they had two players in there at the beginning of the year. Michael Chavis, the third baseman who got popped for PEDs, and one of the least shocking developments of all time, a guy who had struggled throughout the minor leagues and all of a sudden started to hit, got popped for PEDs. I don't think anybody was surprised about that. That was number one. And number two, Jay Groom, the left-handed starter who was drafted 12 overall a couple of years ago. Jay Groom is out with elbow surgery. He is no longer available. So those mishaps that the Red Sox had early in the year with those guys are really starting to bite him in the ass now, which you knew. You knew what happened at that particular point in time. And Chavis, by the way, since they moved him up to Double A, to Double A Portland, where last year he had an 802 OPS with 14 home runs. This year at Portland, albeit in just five games, you know what he's hitting after a PED suspension? 150 with a 561 OPS. It's interesting when you take the juice out of the lemon, so to speak, how dry it can get. 617-779-0985. So here's my question for you. What are you expecting the Red Sox to do with this trade deadline? Because I've told you repeatedly what I want them to do. They need bullpen help. Stories out there still indicate that they're putting a priority on bullpen help. So as much as you hear about Mike Moustakas or even Nolan Arenado or maybe a starting pitcher, the Red Sox are still looking for bullpen help, which means, one, that they understand the importance of it, and two, they don't fully believe in the guys they have. So I want to know what you, as a Red Sox fan, would do with this team in this bullpen. 617-779-0985. And then we'll get to the guy who's going to pull the trigger, maybe, in Dave Dombrowski. And we'll talk about his resume and how important this deadline is for him. We'll kick it off tonight with John, who's in Saugus. John, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. Just a quick observation. 3, 4, or 5 years ago, the Red Sox minor league system was supposedly highly rated. But now, if you fast forward to now, who has come out of that minor league that's done anything other than Benintendi? Look at Moncada. He's a second baseman who hits, what, 240? Travis Shaw. He wasn't even a highly rated prospect,
okay,
right?
But John, you don't think Shaw's turned into a pretty decent player?
Yeah, but nobody knew about him. He wasn't highly rated, right?
Okay, but again, they had him in their system. Like, we can't give them credit if they misread Travis Shaw.
Right.
Like, but so John, listen, I understand your point. Dombrowski's traded a lot of prospects or a lot of minor leaguers, and not a lot of them have panned out. Shaw might really be the one guy you could look at and say that one has bit him in the ass a little bit. Okay, so that's all well and good. If you had Travis Shaw, you wouldn't need Mitch Moreland, or you could have Mitch Moreland and Shaw in the lineup instead of Devers, and you'd still have a prospect in the system. Whatever, you'd have been better off with Travis Shaw. But that aside, I don't understand what your ultimate point is.
Well, you can't. I'm not a Dombrowski apologizing for him, like sick enough for him. But it's just the rating. You can't go by Baseball America. They were wrong. They weren't the fifth best or the top five minor league system. Now you can tell. 5 years later, you can look and see.
Yeah, so, John, you're missing the point. You're missing the point. Is that sometimes prospects are valuable in deals. And look, Dombrowski's used a lot of them. But what I would tell you is, and the Travis Shaw deal is a good one to look at. The Red Sox gave up, I think it was four minor leaguers, four of them in that deal for Tyler Thornburg. Travis Shaw was one. Mauricio Dubon was another. He's a minor league infielder. And Dubon's a decent player, and two others. And in retrospect, when you look back at it, did you have, given what Travis Shaw is, did you have to give up four players for a setup man? So I just think that what happened in some of these cases is to seal these deals, Dombrowski gave up too many prospects. So even if it's a volume thing or too many minor leaguers, you gave away guys that had some value that could go out and buy you a player. Nobody's lamenting the Chris Sale deal. We still don't know what Kopech or Moncada is going to be in the long run. I think it's too early to totally pull the plug on those two guys. But nonetheless, the Red Sox got Chris Sale out of it, and they got him for 3 years. So no problem. Fine. I you've never heard me lament the Chris Sale deal. It's a lot of the other ones that I wonder about in terms of what they really got in exchange for what they gave up. And more importantly, Dombrowski didn't replace the guys he traded away. So this is the real crime, is that if you're going to trade away prospects, fine. You can use prospects in deals to help your big league team. No problem. But sooner or later, you're going to get to a point where your big league team still needs help. I mean, look at everything the Red Sox have invested in this team. Between the money, the prospects they have traded away for Kimbrel, for Sale, for Pomeranz, go right down the list, for Thornburg, Carson Smith, and again, we're not even talking yet about the contracts, like the one they gave David Price. They've invested a ton in this team. And now they're at a spot where they have the best record in baseball, and they are limited as to what they can add because they don't have much to trade, and they can't take on a lot in the way of payroll, I don't think. So Brad Hand just went to the Cleveland Indians. The Cleveland Indians just got better. And I am willing to bet that in the next 12 days, by the close of business on July 31st, the Yankees will have added a starting pitcher and the Houston Astros will have added bullpen help, two pieces, if not one. And so the question is, how much better will those teams be than the Red Sox? Or how much better will they have, how much more will they have improved by than the Red Sox at the deadline? I mean, to me, this is a big thing, which brings us to Dombrowski. And really, whether or not you have the faith in him and whether or not his resume is really what it's all cracked up to be. Because sometimes you say the names of the general managers in Major League Baseball, Theo Epstein, we know what he is. Billy Beane, we know what he is. But the facts don't necessarily support the perception. Okay, the reality and the perception are two different things. So we're going to examine some of that on Dave Dombrowski. We'll do that when we come back, and we'll take your calls.
Boston's most comprehensive discussion of everything baseball. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Here's the thing I find most amazing. Baseball gets caught up.
You don't quit on your team.
When you want to win, play through anything.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
So aside from the offseason, this is really the time of year where the GMs make their money, especially if you have a good team. And this year, Dave Dombrowski's got quite a predicament. He's got a team that has the best record in baseball and that has a chance to win a world championship. They do. The Red Sox, to me, are the third best team in baseball, and the gap between one and three is not big. The three best teams in baseball are Houston, New York, and Boston. I think in that order, if you wanted to flip it around, fine, let's not quibble over the details. I think we can all agree that the three best teams in baseball right now, based on what we've seen, are Boston, New York, and Houston, all in the American League. And so the race can get decided at a time like now, when the executives can improve their rosters, make deals, make additions, tweak the... Let's not forget that in 2004, when the Red Sox won, I mean, you could argue that Theo Epstein won that title at the deadline. You could argue that. Once he traded Nomar Garciaparra out and they added Orlando Cabrera and Doug Mankiewicz, that those just little tweaks altered the Red Sox enough where they took off down the stretch and that was it. Maybe you could argue they had no impact whatsoever. You could argue that if you want to. I think it had a significant effect. So we get to Dave Dombrowski, which brings me to Frank in New Jersey. Frank, what do you got?
Hey, Matt. On Dombrowski, I mean, we knew when they brought him in that he was brought in as a quick fix, that he was going to be somebody to come in. You know, they had finished last place twice in a row. He would be a quick fix for the organization. He was not brought in to build a program or to build an organization. So having said that, I mean, you have to look at his tenure. Okay, they won the division twice, failed in the playoffs. They have to get at least to the World Series in the next 2 years. That's really the window they have right now. Or else his tenure is going to be considered a failure. So going to this deadline, I mean, how depleted they are in the farm system, you know, I would hope that, you know, he would just go after this and, you know, get what they need. Some people would say, well, they're depleted, how are you going to do that? But, you know, I guess I have a question for you. And the question is, okay, they're going after a reliever, but do they have enough to get a reliever? And then I told you about this before. I'm really big on them needing a number two starting pitcher, especially with Erod going down and especially with, you know, having totally no faith in David Price fulfilling that role as the number two.
Okay, so look, Frank, I don't think you're going to get both. Okay, now look, you could say if you want to go out and get a starter and put Price in the bullpen, that's an option too. I have argued that from the very beginning. I felt like, to me, that might be a good way for them to go. But it wouldn't kill me to see him do both. I don't think they have enough pieces to do both. Not really, not affect both in a significant way that could really help the franchise. But since you brought up Dombrowski's history, he was brought in as a quick fix. He was brought in to win a championship. He's not a system builder. Okay, which again, I don't know why you have to be one or the other. Like, shouldn't you be able to do both in a place like Boston? Shouldn't you be able to win championships and build a system? When you have as much money as anyone else, you own your own cable network, and maybe not as much money as anyone else, but close. There's really no reason for the Red Sox not to be able to do both. They shouldn't have to choose win now or win later. They really should be able to win all the time. And I would say the same of the Yankees and the Dodgers and the Cubs, all these long-standing, wealthy organizations. They should all be able to do it. But since you brought up Dombrowski, people talk about Dombrowski as one of the great GMs in the history of the game. At least I feel like they do sometimes. I feel like Dombrowski's name comes up in the, as if he is a Hall of Famer as an executive. Am I wrong, or do you guys feel this way? Is it just me who thinks this way, or do you think that there's sort of a, you know, an attachment to the name?
No, there's some cachet with that name.
Better word, cachet. Thank you. Yeah,
there was he's a real deal baseball guy, and they desperately needed someone like that. And, you know, when he was brought on a few years back, I was into it. I mean, that Miguel Cabrera move. Now, when you think about it, I mean, how difficult was that considering his ties with Florida at the time with the Marlins? But, you know, he was looked at as, you know, almost like a god for pulling that off and getting him with the Tigers back in 2007. So he's had some good moves and obviously had won a World Series when he was with the Marlins. So, yeah, when he came here, I looked at it, too, as like Dave Dombrowski, that's the man.
Okay, so here's what I'm starting to wonder. I'm starting to wonder if Dave Dombrowski is one of the most overrated executives in the history of the game.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jimmy.
He's the monorail guy from The Simpsons.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, he's like a used car salesman. I've used that that term for him before, too. Like, a lot of it just feels kind of hollow. And any of these big moves, you know, the trade for Chris Sale, the trade for getting Craig Kimbrel, signing David Price. I mean, anyone with half a brain could do that, especially signing someone like David Price when you need front-end pitching. He was the best guy available that offseason. What's it take to pull out the checkbook of John Henry? Again, anyone can do that.
So now, when I said this earlier, Felger said, well, Billy Beane. I mean, Billy Beane's never won a World Series. Billy Beane's the most overrated executive in the game. True. Probably true. But Billy Beane, at least, has had an organization, been with the same organization, not that that matters, but he's been with one that doesn't have money. Right? So Billy Beane has had to draft and develop, and on the occasions where Oakland has had good teams, they've never bought it. It's never as simple as just going out and writing the check.
No, he made chicken salad out of chicken poop.
Okay, now they didn't win it, so that the
fine.
That part of it's legit. Dave Dombrowski, in his 30th season as a general manager, his 30th. You know how many World Series he's won?
One.
And he won it 21 years ago in 1997 with a Florida Marlins team that was bought. It was bought.
And then sold that offseason.
I mean, Bonilla, remember all the guys they had on that team? Just
Rob Nen, Bobby Bonilla, was Gary Sheffield on that one?
I think he was.
Moises Alou was on that one.
So look up the roster.
Kevin Brown.
Look up the roster real quick, if you would. They literally built that team in free agency with money. I mean, all they did was buy good players. That's it. But nonetheless, he won it. Okay, he won it. Fine. So Dombrowski has a title. In his 30th season as a general manager, do you know how many times he's gone to the playoffs?
Four?
Eight.
Okay.
21 out of his previous 29, he missed the playoffs. And a good chunk of that was in the wild card era. So he didn't even have to finish first. Up until his final, up until Boston, he had only won two divisions in his career. Okay. He made two other trips to the World Series with the Detroit Tigers. He won with the Marlins, and then when they stripped it down and decided they were going to go small market and build it again, he left. He went to Detroit because he wanted more money to spend. So he got to Detroit. He spent the money there. They made it to the World Series two times. You know how they did?
They won one game, right?
They went 1-8.
Yeah.
They went 1-8. They get swept in one World Series. By the Cardinals.
That was that 83-win team in 06?
83-win Cardinals. They got swept, or they lost in five.
Yeah, that one was embarrassing.
And then they got swept by the Giants in 2012. So twice they got to the World Series and they went 1-8. With the Red Sox, they've made two playoff appearances and their record 1-6. So my question to you as a Red Sox follower is, do you really have faith in this guy?
No.
And if so, why? Tell me why.
Good hair and a turtleneck.
I mean, it feels to me like any executive can make the deals that Dave Dombrowski made. You take someone else's farm system, you trade them for established high-salaried players. I can do that in L.A. I can do it in New York. I can do it in Boston or with the Cubs or any one of those places. Please, someone tell me why I should have so much faith in Dave Dombrowski.
See, just real quick before you go to the calls, like sure. One of the things that I think you will want as a baseball fan is for your GM or president of baseball ops is able to find the diamond in the rough. And no one was better than that, at least in my lifetime, than Theo Epstein, David Ortiz being one of those guys, maybe right at the top. What's Dave Dombrowski's diamond in the rough been? Eduardo Nunez, kind of?
So in his career, you could say Max Scherzer.
Okay, yeah.
J.D. Martinez in Detroit.
Okay, or, that's not a bad one either. Yeah, that's not a bad one either.
But I'm saying here.
Yeah, so Eduardo Nunez might be it, Murray. Really, it might be it. I don't see anything special that Dombrowski has done here. Steve is in Quincy. Steve, what do you got?
Hey, man, so how are you tonight?
Good.
That's good. Hey, a couple things real quick. I totally agree with you about Dombrowski. I think he's so overrated. He hasn't done anything, and he vaporized the Red Sox farm club, the farm system, and they only really have Kimbrel, and they have Sale to show. But my question to you is, do you actually think that the Yankees may have enough bullets to go out and maybe get two starters like Syndergaard and DeGrom?
Steve, look, the Yankees got all the latitude they need. I mean, they have plenty of prospects still in their system, despite the fact that they've had some come up and have an impact, and they got plenty of payroll flexibility. So to me right now, the Yankees are in a spot the Red Sox were in under Theo Epstein. Whenever there's a good player available, the Yankees are going to be in on him because they have the prospects to deal and the money to take on. And this is the spot the Red Sox should be in. Does anyone else, this is the point I'm getting to. Does anyone else find it astonishing that the Red Sox have the best record in baseball 12 days before the trade deadline, and they may not really be able to make a major move because they don't have the farm system or the payroll flexibility to do it? Does anyone else find that astonishing? Because I do. I do. Now, look, I hope Dombrowski surprises me. It would be nice if the Red Sox made a run here down the stretch in September and obviously in October. It would be really nice. It'd be fun. We haven't really seen one in a while. It's been 5 years since 2013. And let's face it, this one's different because the team's younger and the team's more legit. But I find it stunning that they could be in this spot and not really be in a great position to add. Because that to me is the definition of mismanagement. So if you want to deal guys from this Red Sox team, it feels like you have to go to the big league roster. Guys at the end of the big league roster. Which brings me to a story in today's Boston Globe concerning J.D. Martinez. And I'm not suggesting the Red Sox are going to move him. But I do think there's a timeline with J.D. Martinez that makes you wonder what they may be considering with some of their other outfielders. I'll explain when we come back.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. From the field.
You're the one who threw the pitch.
To the clubhouse.
They're a reliever short.
To the corner office.
That sends all the wrong messages.
We have the Sox covered.
Because that's the way I look at it.
The Baseball Reporters on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome back to the Baseball Reporters. There is an interesting narrative forming about J.D. Martinez, which I want to get to in a minute. But before we do that, we will take a couple of your phone calls. Again, trading deadline rapidly approaching. Brad Hand, a left-handed reliever for the San Diego Padres, who I think is under team control for three more seasons beyond this one, traded today from the San Diego Padres to the Cleveland Indians. The Cleveland Indians got Andrew Miller. That would have been, 2 years ago at this time? And Miller ended up being a force for them in the postseason. Almost got Cleveland a world championship. Almost. 2 years later, Miller's knee is bulky, to use a term. Brad Hand was available. Miller's a free agent at the end of the year. And so the Indians went out and got themselves another lefty by trading a prospect who was ranked in the top 20, basically, in Major League Baseball among all prospects. Okay? The Red Sox don't have anyone in the top 100. This is a long way of me telling you the Red Sox had no shot of making this deal. They were outclassed. They weren't in the same class as Cleveland when it came time to make this deal. And this, I think, is going to be a major problem for Dave Dombrowski in the next 2 weeks. Let's go back to your phones real quick here, your calls real quickly. Mike is in Cranston, Rhode Island. Go ahead, Mike.
Tony, thank you for the call, and enjoy your new digs, guys. Tony, I concur with you completely. Now, the one thing I got to say is Dombrowski did build that Expo team, did he not?
He did, but they didn't win anything, Mike.
Well, they didn't win anything, but Tony, it was akin to Belichick getting pulled in Cleveland, like, you know, a year early when the fans knew it. The strike screwed them, Tony. That was out of his control. Now, I'm not sticking up for him at all. But my thing is this. I'm talking ownership. John Henry is a smart man. He, speculatively speaking, gets his trade, right?
Okay, so get to your point, Mike. Please get to your point.
I'm sorry. He's going to look 3 or 4 years ahead. I see this thing crash down. I see hopefully they use Price in the middle role, but what I'm really speaking about is this thing comes crashing down, Theo comes back into town, 4 years down the line and so on a white horse and rebuilds the farm system, and here we go again.
Okay,
and
so
taking my call.
Yeah, so look, Mike, again, if you were to ask me how does the future of the Red Sox look, I don't know how you could feel good about it. Other than the guys they have on the big league roster. The guys they have on the big league roster, Betts, Bogarts, Benintendi, those guys are all basically 25 or younger. And they're all good players. Now, the pitching, that's sort of a separate problem. They don't have good pitching. But nonetheless, you want to say there's some good young talent on the roster. There is. Which brings me to this J.D. Martinez story. We'll get to it again here in 1 second. But Stan's in Cambridge. Go ahead, Stan.
Hey Tony. Good afternoon. You know, I'm a little concerned about the Red Sox catching situation. You know, I saw with Vasquez injured, I saw a game where they had Blake Swihart behind the plate, and he just didn't look engaged. He looked a little bit sort of lost, and I know that they're throwing around different places. Would there be a possible trade option for acquiring a catcher for the Red Sox? I'm thinking like someone like the one I see. I follow a lot of baseball. The one I see that they may be able to grab is Wilson Ramos, who I think is probably the best catcher in the American League right now. I mean, he's totally engaged. I saw something where he mentioned that.
Okay, so yeah, Stan, I'll stop you there only because I just want to try to keep it to the point.
Their name's been rumored around the Marlins guy, JT Realmuto.
Yeah,
am I saying that correctly?
And I think the Marlins have given no real indication yet that they're going to move him. I mean, he's a stud. And so do I think it's possible that the Red Sox could acquire a catcher? Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's a need, although they did just sign Vasquez, not that it was huge money or a huge deal. And I think they expect Vasquez to be back and playing for them at the end of the season. And I think they're good with the Leon-Vasquez combination. Is it possible? Sure. Do I think it's going to happen? No, I don't. So you should be concerned about Swihart. Swihart's not a great catcher. He's an offensive player. Okay, he's an offensive player. And you don't have prospects to deal at catcher or anywhere else. Which brings me to the story in the Globe today on J.D. Martinez. And to me, again, with J.D. Martinez, there's a little bit of an interesting timeline to look at in terms of what the Red Sox have told us about how much he's going to play the outfield and how good he is in the outfield versus what we are hearing now. So I want to go back to a story that, believe it or not, Greg Bedard wrote. Boy, that sounded like a real shot at Greg, right? The football guy wrote a baseball story about the Red Sox in July when he was down in Washington covering that series. And Bedard actually asked Cora, and I'll read you directly from his column here that night. July 3rd, Bedard writes, I asked Cora after the game if he could foresee a time down the road in a pennant race or in the postseason where he would entertain the idea of J.D. Martinez playing in the outfield. He didn't hesitate with his answer. No, he said with a laugh and smile. Nah. And then he goes on to say, the other three guys are pretty good players too, and they're elite defenders. Nothing against him, meaning JD. He's a good defender. But when those three are in the outfield, we're above average. That's on July 3rd. Okay, a week later, basically a week later. It's actually 6 days, I think, Jimmy Stewart, right?
July 9th, okay, pregame.
So 6 days later, the Red Sox put an outfield alignment on the field at home. I think it was against the Angels.
Against the Texas Rangers.
Texas, okay. In which Mookie Betts played center, Benintendi stayed in left, and J.D. Martinez played right field at Fenway Park, which is one of the tougher right fields in the game. Here's what Cora said before the game about that alignment.
Like I told you guys in spring training, I said I was going to stay with Mookie in right field and not use J.D. in right field. But the more we see him playing the outfield, the more comfortable we are. We ran it through the analytic department, and there's a good outfield alignment. I feel that the three of them are comfortable where they're at. And I'm not saying Benny is uncomfortable in center field. I feel that this is our best defensive outfield with these three guys. You know, it's not going to happen that often. But now that we got Pierce, whenever we give Jackie a day off or he doesn't start, we'll go with this one.
Okay, so I just found that interesting that Bedard asked him on July 3rd, and he says, in a big spot, could you see J.D. Martinez in right field? And he says, no. Then a week later, Cora puts J.D. Martinez in right field at Fenway Park. And he says, we checked it with the analytics department, and this is a good outfield for us. Which brings us to today in the Boston Globe. Headline on a story by Alex Speer. J.D. Martinez's defense? ? What the numbers really say. And then there was a photo of Martinez catching a ball in left field. And under the photo is the caption, criticized for perceived shortcomings in the field. Metrics show a more complete picture of Martinez's ability. And if you read the story, and I'll spare you all the details, but if you read the story, in essence, what it says is that Martinez used to rate poorly based on old defensive metrics. New defensive metrics that also take positioning into account, something the Red Sox apparently are doing better now. If you put him in the proper place at the start of the play, J.D. Martinez is actually a slightly above average outfielder. Does anyone believe that, by the way, Jim Murray, Jimmy Stewart? Do you guys believe that J.D. Martinez is an above-average outfielder?
No.
No, not a chance.
Okay, not even close. I mean, if he is average, it's average at best. Okay, he just doesn't move well enough. Sorry, does he catch the ones he gets to? For the most part. Although I saw him try to catch a ball in right field earlier in the year in a game in Florida, if you remember. I think it was might have been the opening series of the year. What a disaster. And he was a complete disaster.
Well, think of it this way, too. Any of the games that they've played where there's like a cavernous left field, has he been in left field for those games?
No.
Against the Marlins? No, he has not.
Which is why, Murray, him playing right field at Fenway was so noteworthy. And again, it brings me back to this story and to the trade deadline. If the Red Sox are willing to play him in the outfield more, maybe they're thinking about trading Jackie Bradley. Maybe that's really what it is. Now, again, I would be surprised if they do it. Because typically what happens at the trade deadline is teams that are in it do not trade players, specifically starting ones, off of their major league roster. Blake Swihart, I wouldn't be shocked in the least bit. If Jackie Bradley gets dealt, normally I'd be surprised a little bit. Now I'm starting to wonder. Eric is in Newbury. Eric, what do you got?
Hey, Matt. You know, thanks for the call. You are 100% correct. The Red Sox are the Toronto Raptors. And I'm going to tell you, because as a Celtics fan looking in, at the end of the year, how the seasons play out, there are teams that you can say, you know, players had a good season, but you're confident you're going to beat them. Other teams like New York, Houston, they look at us and they say they're confident they're going to beat us. And you nailed it, Maz.
Okay, so Eric, look, that came up because, again, this is an important year for the Red Sox. The last 2 years, they won 93 games, they get into the postseason, and get their asses kicked. They're 1-6 in the last two postseasons. Dave Dombrowski is 1-8 in his last two World Series. And with the Red Sox, he's 1-8, 1-6 in two postseasons. Now they have this young nucleus, And all of a sudden, it's make or break time with a team that has the best record in baseball and at a trading deadline where other teams have more artillery than they do. So what happens if the Red Sox go into October again and fall on their faces? The damage is already done to them in terms of credibility with the fan base when it comes to October. Because as good a year as they are having, you, like I, look at them and you say, yeah, but they got to win in October. Can you imagine what they're going to have to do next year if they lose again? If they get into the division round and get their asses kicked again? And they lose in four games and they go to 2-9 in the division series under Dave Dombrowski? There's just, this is, they've reached a point here where it has to happen. And I don't need them to win the World Series to believe they're on the right track. But what I do need them to do is to win a playoff series and make a run at the American League Championship. A legitimate run at the American League Championship. If that happens, we can at least say, okay, there's progress. What progress have they really made in the last 2 years? Because to me, it feels like your classic regular season team that gets its ass kicked in the playoffs. The Toronto Raptors of Major League Baseball.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mann.